You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is trying to make S-Darn happen.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast presented by SiriusXM. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm coming to you from a room that's just filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Happy Friday.
I don't think we need to make S-Darn happen. I think he's making it happen on his own.
S-Darn. With a helping hand from you, Mark Sessler.
I mean, I don't feel like that's a nickname that's really taken off any more so than IR Boomerang took off. But you try, and then you sometimes at some point.
IR Boomerang's in the culture.
Sort of.
I don't think maybe it took off as much as we believed it did in the moment.
It's not over.
It's good. It's great. It's way better than, what is the technical term? Short-term IR or whatever?
That's IR. IR designated to retire.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Extremely clunky. Total clunk fest.
Yes, I'm here. I don't know. What is up with the Los Angeles court system? Neil Zuser checks in 5 days in a row. They're like, nah, we're cool. Which worked out.
I mean, yeah, I thought you had a good. That's great. That's what you said on tech. You just picked the perfect game. They said it couldn't be done in 2019. That people, you know, they're calling in relievers in the fifth or the sixth. No, you got through all 5 days. It's pretty awesome. Yeah,
I'm not saying you need to share it with anyone listening, but you had a strong theory, I thought, as to why you were not selected.
I had a theory that I share with my friends privately.
Oh, okay. Well, people can guess at what the theory is.
But, so I fulfilled my duties as a citizen. I'm in the clear, and it's full steam ahead as we move now inside 3 weeks before the start of the regular season. How about that, Wes?
All right. I'd rather the games mean something.
What? We meant 3 weeks to the season, and you were just kind of like, you were disappointed. You want this offseason to go on forever.
I mean, it's August. It's still baseball season.
Unfortunately, the games, week two of the preseason began on Thursday night. And while the standings don't matter to most, to me they do, there are some very real ramifications of giant men running hard on the field and crashing into each other. We'll get into some injury stuff. In fact, we're going to go through takeaways from the Thursday night preseason action. Also, Zuser wrote a banger.
Oh, yeah.
Time to dig in. Head coach hot butt rankings. Now, NFL.com, where I wrote this piece, where you could find it at NFL.com/Hansis, their headline, NFL head coach job security rankings, : who's safe on hot seat. Well, that's nice. That's, I guess, good for SEO or whatever. But we know what this really is. It's the hot butt rankings.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That headline leaves out the sizzle.
We return the sizzle on the Around the NFL podcast.
Thankfully, though, the written article, which is well worth checking out, it's got great little it's got pictures.
Really,
it's
well
got
done.
Good analysis. It doesn't have the drop, the sound effect that we do. So, no. In a lot of ways, it's a superior product.
It is. So you could say that. You could argue that. I would refute that claim.
I mean, if you you could also on loop play that sound effect while you're reading this.
I mean, we've retired some sound drops over the years, or they've just died off. I think it's time. Let's move on.
Well, you're alone on that.
Bring back Greggy Does Dallas.
It's been a while.
Who could it be? Who is at number 32 on the power ranks. I think you know who's won. So we'll get to that. And also a very special guest will join us, and we'll keep it as a secret until that person arrives.
Wow.
To the show. But first, let us get to it. The preseason action, some takeaways from Thursday night.
Third down and 10 out of the shotgun. Jackson will run. Sidestep the man, gets inside the 10, the 5, hurdles a man, steps in for the touchdown. Oh, Lamar Jackson with a flash, but a flag on the play. Fun to see it, but I think I'd still rather see him slide in August.
Yes, it didn't count. But who cares if it didn't count? It's the preseason. Lamar Jackson once again showing his incredible ability with the ball in his hands, moving his legs on a 3rd and 10. He took off, faked Tre'Mon Williams out of his Nikes.
Not hard to do if you're Tre'Mon Williams, not a young defensive back at
oh,
this point.
Please.
Well, I'm just saying.
Leaped over Jaire Alexander into the end zone, 18-yard touchdown. Called back, Willie Snead got hit with an illegal block, but who cares? It was a reminder, first takeaway for me, Lamar Jackson, what a talent he is, which we know, but it's good to see it again. And after the game, it was against the Packers. Aaron Rodgers and Lamar met at midfield, and Rodgers said, "I love watching you play. That was pretty spectacular. Have a great season. Slide a little bit. Slide a little bit." Certainly in week 2 of the preseason, get down.
One little side note to that Rodgers-Lamar Jackson meetup was an incredible tweet by typically an annoying tweeter, RG3, who put out video of him just sort of standing there while the two of them, the two other quarterbacks who are actually playing in the game, talked to each other, and he called himself RG Third Wheel. I thought he did a nice job with that. A little bit of self-deprecation. It's not the worst from RG3.
No, it's actually good progress, I feel like, in what's been a roller coaster. And also, Lamar Jackson very casually referred to Aaron Rodgers as GOAT. Hey, GOAT. This is the lingo that happens within...
Rodgers likes that.
...within the league.
I mean, the whole GOAT thing is like, why... though it literally says great in the acronym for GOAT. It's greatest of all time. Yet now it's become common that there are multiple GOATs at
yes.
all times in
That's
all sports
point.
In multiple
Preach,
ways. So it
Preach.
Doesn't make any sense.
There can only be one. You're right about that. But it has become kind of part of the nomenclature.
It's sort of up there with epic. Like everything is epic now.
I've got an analogy. It's like when I was in the dating world on these apps, every woman refers to herself as a unicorn. Which defeats the whole purpose of being a unicorn.
Lamar's a unicorn, though. How about that? He's a unicorn.
I don't know if that's what that stands for, Wes.
Well, there are other meanings to unicorn, which if they're all that.
What are they? What's the meaning?
You know.
No, I don't. I've been out of the game years now.
You've never heard of what a unicorn is?
I mean, if we can't explain what your theory about not going to jury duty was, I'm not sure we can
just Google
this topic.
Okay.
I believe in this situation that your unicorn may not be what's on the table in all these dating apps.
Okay. I would assure you it's not the case.
Okay. Anyway, he is Lamar Jackson. Back to football.
I don't put almost anything into these preseason performances. I'm more excited. He did look composed. Just that by everyone who's watched his practice and what he said after this game, that you just can't compare where I am, Lamar Jackson, right now compared to where I was a year ago. I'm so much more advanced throwing the ball and understanding kind of the concepts of the offense. That's what everyone said watching practice. You could see it a little bit in the preseason. I'm not putting too much into that, but I buy that he's pretty far further advanced as a passer.
You see that, and it's a reason to get so excited about Baker Mayfield. Sam Darnold, who they're saying has more zip on his throws, and he contributed that to being in a full off season where he's not prepping for a combine and you know, the draft and all that malarkey. He's able to just focus on the game. These guys that flashed in year one, there's reason to be highly optimistic about what they can do in year two. Wes, what was a takeaway that you had from yesterday?
Well, I think we've learned by now that preseason analysis tends to simply be confirmation bias. If you are worried about Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury, I was worried because you're talking about a very talented guy who's joining the worst team in the league with a terrible offensive line, a first-time head coach bringing a system into the NFL that's never been in the NFL, a subpar receiving core, subpar offensive line, bad defense. There's a lot on his shoulders. If you're worried about that, then you're even more worried after like 4 punts and a safety to start the season. But if you think that Kyler is going to be a sensation, you just write it off as, hey, it's the preseason. It's not a big deal. So to me, I'm a little worried.
I don't put any – I'm worried, but not because of that performance at all, because their offense, even more than any other, is going to be so game-specific, and it's being so shielded in the preseason that they're so vanilla that they're not doing anything that they're going to do that you almost can't look at it. Now, there are a few things like him taking false starts and him taking that safety.
The clap snap.
That was just bad. You know, he had some big-time rookie moments.
Are you worried at all about the helmet-to-body ratio?
What well, is, Wes, what I is know that? You are.
What is that? That
yeah, I'm with Wes on this.
It's like watching Marvin the Martian out there.
The helmet.
The big
like
helmet.
It looks like a Pop Warner
in
player.
In general, like his stature, and I know this is way played out if you were part of the draft industrial complex in the months leading up to the draft when he finally goes number one. Is he too small to succeed in the NFL? It does stand out how small in stature he seems on that field. And even at one point, he goes to the sideline to speak with his head coach. And Kingsbury, he's towering over Murray. And I'm not saying there's anything to really take out of that, but he is not a big guy. And you just wonder. You don't see that a lot. He is not what the typical quarterback mold is.
Not saying he's doomed to fail because of his height. Just saying it's
helmet.
Striking to see on the field a quarterback with that helmet.
The helmet, it's a little
ratio.
Like a Marvel like bad guy character, like the bad guy in Aquaman
like,
a little bit.
It's like when like short rock stars, you look at a see him in concert and they're wearing big like 3-inch platform boots.
Right.
Is that what he's doing with the helmet to get a couple extra inches?
I think it's just a normal helmet, but on a 5'9" 3/4
It's a cool
guy,
looking helmet though. He does the visor. I can't think of many starting quarterbacks that come into the league with the visor like that. I like it.
My one thing with them is if the offense struggles at all early or it goes through something like we saw last night, and it's fair to expect that it might. They have nothing. It seems like they have nothing on defense to support what's happening. Patrick Peterson is out on a long suspension to start the year. Robert Alford got hurt last night. It just
he broke his leg, a starting corner. Yeah, and that is a concern. In both games, by the way, the opposing offenses went up and down the field on the Cardinals. That's a little bit of concern. But I'm not worried about the offense. They remind me of kind of Mike Shanahan, RG3, they're hiding things until week one.
I keep hearing that comparison. We'll see.
Mark, how about you?
I know every time I bring up this team, it sounds like I'm buttering Dan's bread to try to like make to not reveal my real feelings. But
it's getting weird.
I will say this about Sam Darnold. Because one thing I think you can pull away from these preseason games is how does the first team offense do against what should be mostly defensive starters. And so you're really only getting one drive or two. And it's 2 weeks in a row where the Jets are ripping downfield. And it's not just how they're doing it. It's what we didn't see much from Darnold last year because I thought they kept him under wraps in that hideous offense is aggressive downfield throws. I think their wide receivers are – it's a talented group that's working well with Darnold. It's interesting to see Ty Montgomery clearly be a guy that's going to get more usage than I would have thought maybe – before this preseason started.
I'd be worried
started.
About that. He was a disaster for the Ravens. And
he's their backup.
Did not
but
help
it's,
the Packers.
Yeah, but they have Lev Bell. So it's like right. They also have other running backs they can use. But my one concern, I don't like any team at this point that gets into, you know, a couple weeks before the season and you've got this character, Taylor Bertolet, missing extra points and looking like he simply does not belong on the field.
Oh,
as
he's
kicker.
Done. Of course, Chandler Cannizzaro misses 2 extra points in week one of the preseason, walks into his coach's office and says, I'm retiring at 28. Must be nice. Taylor Bertolet or whatever, Bertolet not going to be here much longer. He misses 2 extra points. He'll be gone. And what's going to end up happening, it seems like the stars are aligned that the Vikings, they just got the guy from Baltimore. They're going to kick Dan Bailey to the curb. And I think Dan Bailey's kind of on the ropes. But the Jets or another similarly needy team will end up with Dan Bailey. The
there'll
Jets
be a few
kicker
of those.
Is not
Bertolet's been thrown over the ropes.
Yeah,
so
there'll be a few of those kickers cut. I think but there's multiple teams looking.
Guys out there, by the way.
Looking for him. Yeah, there's multiple teams that'll be looking for kickers. I think the Bears, after all this kicking competition and all this nonsense talk throughout all the offseason, there's a very good chance their kicker is just someone they signed 2 days before the season starts. That none of it mattered.
But to wrap that, I know Adam Gase has there's suspicions about him. He's got his detractors and
he's
how the whole thing can go. I can think of another coach, and I'm not comparing them, that super arrow down on this guy after he totally burnt out with a team, went back and was an assistant for a while, and someone somewhere prized him, thought he was just this value that deserved a second shot. That was Bill Belichick. I'm not saying that they're the same on any level, but there's something about Adam Gase, and especially his demeanor during this preseason. I love the smelling salt stuff. I love just sort of the fact that he's a little jacked up and has a huge beard, and he works well with Darnold. I just kind of think he doesn't give an
F. I think they're going to score points.
They kind of work.
I like the annual tradition of Greg Williams calling like blitzes on 70% of plays in a preseason.
But he
and just destroying the Falcons. The Falcons and, the,
and their line looked suspect.
And their offensive line has injuries. But they're not preparing for those blitzes. So, again, that's one of those
things. This is why, though, Greg Williams, even in a preseason game, he has to do it. They are so – they're in so much trouble, Jets, on defense. And Avery Williamson blew out his knee. And that is their starting inside linebacker. And he is a quarterback on that defense. That
or
is
his huge, ACL.
Yeah, that is a huge loss for a defense that already has no secondary or a real pass rush. I think the Jets are going to lose a lot of 38-31 games this year, unfortunately. And Greg Williams, his task will be to go nuts, Greg Williams style, with blitzing, I think. That will be their only chance to be hyper-aggressive, but they're going to get burned a lot.
It's
Matt
a good
Ryan
point.
Has gotten so much better at improv the last 3 or 4 years. He is not the quarterback people think he is.
No.
He gets away from pressure pretty well and makes plays that are not scripted.
He's in my top five. He would be in my top five.
Greg, you got it.
Greg Williams is a perfect – if you're going to have Greg Williams, do it when he's kind of – has less talent almost and has to go crazy scheming.
Like, well, that was him.
He's a good guy to make a bad defense fine.
And, that's what they need. That's what they need. They need a bad defense to be okay. It's not going to be good.
My takeaway is that Dwayne Haskins and Case Keenum are not inspiring Jay Gruden, and that he would love for one of these guys to step up. But when they really asked him about Keenum after the game on Thursday night, you could just tell he's just – Jay Gruden's not excited about Keenum. Colt McCoy's been too injured to play, and so they have to choose one of them. And Haskins, look, the touchdown throw he made was one of the best throws of the preseason, standing in the pocket, hit him in stride way down the field. That was awesome. But after that, his next six possessions were 5 punts and a fumble, and he seems to be making some good decisions, but not delivering the ball accurately, and it doesn't seem like he has a great chance to start week one. And I feel bad for him because the left tackle and their entire offensive line is just so troubling right now. They don't have Trent Williams. And this quote from Adrian Peterson, which was from before the game, but it really I wanted to say it because it's so telling. He thinks that the left tackle situation is making life so much harder on Dwayne Haskins. It's making him have to think more, not process things as calmly. Matter of fact, I think it's impacting all of our QBs. Guys are coming off the edge in practice right there on the QB and the running back every other down. It's been a struggle. That's what Adrian Peterson
well,
said
you know
about
who
his teammates.
Adrian's saying that too. He wants that to get back to his left tackle.
Well, he's defended Trent.
Yeah, it sounds
pretty,
like he's closer.
Heavily.
By the way, Adrian Peterson still jump cutting like he's 27.
He looked pretty great last night.
Like
I thought of Wes because it was last show and he reminded us.
Yeah, he heard me saying they could go get Melvin Gordon.
Didn't you call him like garbage or something?
I just said like
don't. He said he doesn't matter.
I said don't worry about him long term if you want to go
that's
get
not what he said. He said he doesn't matter.
Another big injury.
Sorry.
I mentioned Avery Williamson of the Chargers. This is a big one, Wes. Huge. Safety Derwin James, one of the best young players in football, suffered a fracture in his foot. He's going to miss a significant amount of time. He is a candidate for the boomerang IR potentially. It's that level of an injury. Maybe not something at this point that we're hearing is going to end a season, but will significantly eat into it.
Just a note, boomerang, just so that we can try to get this thing off the ground a second time. Not
what did I say?
Boomerang IR. It's IR boomerang. Rolls off the tongue just a little more smoothly.
Last year's Chargers were the outlier. They didn't have their season decimated by injuries, and now we're returning to the pre-2018 Chargers. You've got Derwin James.
Okay.
Along with Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, the 3 best defensive players. Russell Okung, the left tackle, who knows when he's going to be back. Keenan Allen, ankle injury, out for the entire preseason. Melvin Gordon, holdout, who knows when he's coming back. There's a lot of question marks on this Chargers team.
And the Okung one is major. We talked about how he had almost a life-threatening injury or with his heart. He hasn't practiced at all. And if he doesn't, their tackle situation with Philip Rivers at 38 years old behind him would be up there with the worst in the entire NFL between their left tackle and their right tackle. And it's not like they're great at guard and in the middle either. I that is the thing that really worries me about the Chargers.
Anybody else have something?
Yes. The pass interference call in the Redskins-Bengals game.
Mm, that was not good.
I think replay review sounds great in theory. You fix what's obviously wrong. In practice, common sense and entertainment value just get thrown out the window on judgment calls. We've seen this for years. And the thing about rules is they're pretty worthless if they aren't, if they're applied arbitrarily and capriciously. The sequence of events in that play, we'll see it play out dozens of times throughout the season, and you won't see a flag thrown once.
Is it, that was the play where he came back to the ball. Was
came back to the ball. And the explanation this morning from the officials is that there was a kind of a hand check at some point that threw the defender off balance like 10 yards before the catch, which you can only see on coach's replay, except you can't even really see it. I think it's never going to be called.
Doesn't it feel like, and we talked about it a little bit on the last show, there's some pushback going on here between the officiating group and what the owners
they're trying to make a point
put into the league.
The officials hate this rule.
And it's
that's
all it's all playing right on the stage of Twitter where people are going absolutely nuts over it. I have two little quick things. Love this in the Ravens game. And it's a stretch for me to like anything the Ravens do out of principle, but they have in their stadium now, you know, when you go to an NFL game and it turns, or any sort of big sports stadium, and it turns towards night and they kick up the gigantic league lights surrounding, it takes like, you know, 15 minutes for them to warm up and
yes,
truly brighten. The Ravens have a feature now, and it happened last night. And in that game, by the way, features Trace McSorley, my guy. That is a quarterback controversy in Baltimore. But they have a lights on, lights off feature where it's almost like you're in your bedroom and you just want to go on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off. That quickly, the stadium lights shoot on and shoot off. It is fantastic.
So it's like Clark Griswold and Christmas Vacation. Just flip the switch.
I have to wonder if it's a little bit of a nod to the Ravens-Niners Super Bowl. But I think it's probably something that it's not that. My other note is that, you know, last year I think we obviously as a group had some issues with Monday Night Football. I'm not sure that they're totally solved, but watching the broadcast last night, minus Jason Witten, good luck to him, but Joe Tessitore and Booger were a lot better, I thought, and I thought the Tessitore took about 30 to 35% of his exuberance and kind of just brought it down a notch, and I found it a much more listenable, the tenor
enjoyable
to me was
program.
I need
result.
That. They want that. I want that. We all want that. Mm. So
they are.
It takes time to grow Booger, as a broadcast team.
Booger and Tessitore survived. They're survivors because they could have easily been kicked out the door because that was how bad the criticism was, although most of it was trained on Witten. They are now set up well. Once you survive, now you get the opportunity to have the bounce-back season, you know, where people are going to be like, wow, Booger and Tess, these guys aren't so bad after all. If they play this right, this will be a very – nice season for them.
It is a bounce back scenario.
And Tessitore, he's got a big reality show hit too. Is everything coming up Tessitore?
Big summer hit.
Well,
I think it's with Rob Riggle, golf. It's all happening. Then they were.
Wait, is that the Russell Wilson show? I think he's the executive producer. Wilson.
I know is multiple streams of income work for any human being.
That sounds good. They had the fortune too of having Kyler Murray play the whole first half and something to talk about. Where in some of these games, the Sean McVay-ification of the preseason is really taking over. Sean McVay last year didn't play any of his starters on either side of the ball for the entire preseason, which was next level in minimizing the preseason. And more teams are going that way. Like Eagles, Jaguars, neither team was really playing any starters. It's like, I like this. It can just skip. I don't need to watch Minshew versus Clayton Thorson. Just skip it. The preseason, it started to be down to just weeks 2 and 3. And now it's just down to, like, some teams week 3. Like,
well, the one note, though, obviously with the Eagles is your reason for doing that is to completely eradicate the concept of losing major players to injury. But by playing their backups, they've lost Nate Sudfeld last week to a serious injury, and Cody Kessler's back in concussion protocol for, like, multiple times in his career.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, get him up there.
You called it.
By the way, the program is called Holy Moly. And it is not Russell Wilson that's behind it. It is Steph Curry. And Joe Tessitore is, yes, the co-host. I mean, we got all the bases covered here. We want to talk about a professional podcast.
Plus, we got a special surprise guest. I mean, this is, I think, the first surprise guest in the podcast history where we'll have to not include it on the description on iTunes, or else that would blow it. So this is truly...
No, that's on Ricky.
Truly an exciting moment. The tension will be raised.
Rick Hollywood has to be plugged in on that, too.
Twitter, too, by the way.
Yeah, whatever you guys need.
Cool. Good to hear you.
It's Saturday afternoon in her world right now.
All right, that's what's happening in... That's what's happening in the preseason. Of course, more games to come this weekend. Hopefully, no more serious injuries. All right, let's get to it. Fire up the burners because it's that time to talk about it. Now, and I know there's going to be people around the league that work in front office that even they don't like seeing it. They don't like seeing it. The NFL.com has a story about hot butts and head coaches. The ranking that I've put together is not a prediction of how these seasons are going to go. It's more just a lay of the land. What kind of footing are these men on as they begin the 2019 season? And I put it into tiers. And I you guys could tell me how you want to hit this, how you want to handle it. But I broke it down into, I believe, five different tiers. It should be no surprise that number one is Bill Belichick. And he's in his own realm.
In a tier called Bill Belichick.
In a tier called Bill Belichick because that's how important – Belichick is to the Patriots and the legacy he's built there. Maybe, Wes, I thought I'd lean on you as a story. Now, you might bring up a certain man connected to the Cincinnati Bengals, a founding father. But since Vince Lombardi, has anyone been safer from the hot seat than Bill Belichick?
That's a fair question. Yeah, I would bring up the guy who was the owner of the Bengals while he was the head coach, Paul Brown.
Right.
How about like Zach Taylor right now? There's no way the Browns are firing a coach 1 year into his contract.
You guys all said that about Steve Wilkes at this time last year.
It happens. It happens. In fact,
the Bengals would never.
The great people in NFL Research sent me some info on that. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens every two or three years. Wilkes, Rod Chudzinski with Cleveland was, I think, the last guy before that. Occasionally it happens. So, and with this list, and you guys jump in whenever, I did stick all the first-year head coaches in kind of the same group right in the middle. And when it comes down to it, in the last 10 years of the league, it's been really consistent. It's been 7 or 8 coaches that get let go at the end of every week 17, that Black Monday. It was 8 this year. It was 7 last year. I think it was 6 the year before that, but then 7, 7, 8. You have to go back. There was one outlier year, 2010, I believe it was, when it was just 3 coaches fired.
Good year.
But every other year, there's going to be turnover almost at a 25% clip. So let's jump into it. I want to know where I got it wrong.
Okay.
Let's start
there.
I've
got one guy who sticks out, and maybe this is the Greg Rosenthal influence on you. But John Harbaugh would be like 12 spots higher, I think, at least. I think he would be in that top 10 for me. You've got him 23rd.
So you have him kind of as the 10th. If you're going back to front, right. Who has the hottest seat? He has the 10th hottest seat.
Which would put him 23 out of 32, somewhat of a long shot to get fired, but he would be in the conversation. Wes, I did make some phone calls as the insider, checking in with some things, and I was told don't be so confident. Don't read too much at
Well, we've been told that for
extension.
A few years now, and I've never believed it.
Here's the bottom line with him, though. I mean, we can say the contract extension is something to just, you know, lock him in, he's safe. But this is essentially a 500 coach over the last 6 years since that Super Bowl.
My one thing
one
is,
playoff win.
I think
he's a good coach.
He is. A year ago, you know, the question would have been, what if he had handled the transition from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson disastrously? Or if he resisted it when everyone else saw it should happen? I thought he handled it perfectly, and to me it gave him a new lease on life. And I go back to this with some of these guys, with a John Harbaugh. It's almost like you put him in, for me, like a Mike Tomlin. A lot of people have issues with Tomlin. Some people have issues with Harbaugh. You move on from them, they both get hired the night they get fired by someone else. And then you, as the Ravens, have to find someone that you can tell your fan base is better than John Harbaugh.
I think he's pretty safe. I would put him in the middle. He is the first guy in that tier. And so if you had just kind of put him at the back of the other tier, I think he's somewhere there where things have to go pretty wrong.
The other part of it, and you could read into this if you want, is, you know, Eric DaCosta, he's in control of that show in Baltimore now. And when Harbaugh signed the extension, if you want to be, you know, read into things, in his tweet and his statement, he thanked ownership but not the general manager. And DaCosta, maybe, you know, wants to put a stamp on this team at a certain point and bring in his guy.
Isn't
Harbaugh already his guy? They've been together forever.
If you're looking for kind of surprise head coaches to lose the job, that often happens with a new GM, even though he's been
there. It's a little bit different when the GM comes from in-house and has been the GM in waiting for half a decade.
Let it be said, I do not believe he'll be fired.
Okay.
Mm. I have one for you. I hear where you're coming from by putting Kyle Shanahan way down at 28, but to me, it would be number one. We have not seen that coach run a full season with even a healthy roster, much less not having his quarterback. And so this season decides a lot. If Jimmy G is a good passer and they still wind up 4-12 or 5-11, okay. But unless that 49ers organization, which has burned through coaches over the last 5 or 6 years, is convinced that Kyle Shanahan is not anything that most everyone who looks at that team believes that he is, one of the best and most creative coaches around, to me, to move on from him after this season and put him down at 28, I just feel that's in danger territory where I just don't see him that way. But maybe my confidence
that.
Might be too high in him.
Let me throw out a hypothetical. Let's say the Niners go 6-10 this year. And in 3 years, he's 16-32. And they're not moving in the right direction. And on top of it, I think John Lynch is in a lot of danger potentially as well. And if Lynch goes, they might bring in a guy who wants to bring in his own guy. So I think Shanahan, maybe the reason he's a few spots lower on this list than I would have put him just based on what I think of him, which he's a talented play caller, is because he might get thrown out with the bathwater if they don't get better this year. It's time. By the way, we can make excuses all day about why Kyle Shanahan didn't get it done in the first 2 years or the Niners didn't. If it happens again, at what point do you say, well, maybe this isn't working, this whole
regime? The football gods have been pretty angry at Kyle Shanahan since halftime of Super Bowl 51. I mean, the Falcons and then the injuries. That category, so it's seat perhaps warmer than preferred, and this is your second to last tier, is to me the most fascinating. I'm with Mark. I would have put Shanahan closer to Harbaugh, and I think that Ron Rivera, Dan Quinn, and Jason Garrett, for instance, who are all really interesting names, would have a little less job security than him. I think Garrett needs to make the playoffs. I think Dan Quinn maybe needs to make the playoffs, and I think Ron Rivera maybe needs to make the playoffs. And it's all different reasons. I think Falcons are maybe just a little antsy after they let him fire his coaches, if his defense is still bad. If they still miss the playoffs, I think they'd make a change. Rivera, with the ownership change, I think everyone loves Ron Rivera, and I think they're in position to make the playoffs. I'm going to prick them to the playoffs, and then it'll be fine. But I just think with the ownership change, and they might want to change GMs at some point, like that's a tough situation for him.
It's funny, in doing the research around Garrett, because he's a very interesting case here. I have him at 27. He's been there for 9 years. Never been to a Super Bowl or really come close, and they're kind of in a Super Bowl or bust place. Back in July at the start of training camp, it was such a total cowboy scene where they have everybody up on a dais for a press conference outdoors in Oxnard, and a reporter asks this.
What do you need to see from Jason to bring him back in 2020?
What did you say? I really didn't hear you.
What do you need to see from Jason to bring him back in 2020 as your head coach?
I really didn't hear you. I got a damn drill going on back over there. Next question.
I mean, that's such a total Cowboys moment, but it is so interesting that this is Jason Garrett's life, Wes. It seems more acute, and maybe it's because of the spotlight with the Cowboys, than anyone else, that he has to worry about these things.
Well, we've talked about this quite a bit, that Jerry brought him up through their farm system, basically. This is his hand-chosen guy that he has brought up and basically installed him. And his job security has always seemed much higher to me than people outside of the Cowboys would think.
But this year is unique with him in his last year of his contract. They especially Stephen Jones, seems to be saying the playoffs are bust. I only have one coach on this list that, to me, is in the totally different tier than I would have him.
Okay.
I would move him down two tiers.
Whoa.
From 14 down to the late 20s. It's Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien's had a lot going on, and I think the ownership change there has been quiet.
Are we bringing out the Bill O'Brien punching bag? Roll it out.
No.
Roll it out.
It's not. All right. No matter what happens going into this, if he trades Clowney, okay, that's on him. That's sort of, he's going to have to own that. Does that work out or not? Like, whatever's happening this season, if it all goes wrong, I think the ownership change is something to consider. Bob McNair passed away. Mm. Cal McNair's son took over. I just think everything that's gone on with him pushing people out, could it get ugly? Like, if that season gets ugly, I think they could just think, let's start over. I think he'd be in a little more trouble than
you
think.
As I wrote, he carries the hammer there right now, and he's in a lot of control. But I do, and I wrote that. I left it open that things could change quickly. And you brought up the ownership, and I should have put that in there because that's certainly something to be connected to this conversation. But, yeah, they were in last place 2 years ago. They turned around last year. If things take a sour turn again and they have a new regime ahead of them in place, he maybe could become vulnerable quickly.
The snowball factor is
high. The counter against that is that the McNair family has shown their loyalty to him by letting him fire two GMs in 18 months.
That's what I'd say.
That's a counter to it.
His DNA there has been surviving through a lot of already rocky scenarios. And, you know, you have to wonder. It comes down to ownership's belief in you. And they've already seen him through. Yes, I know. I realize there's some change there, but it's still the same group owning the team to some degree, right. And they've seen Bill O'Brien through a lot.
He may be good at this, by the way. Maybe not right. Good as a GM, maybe only so-so as a head coach ultimately, but he might be a guy that knows how to sit on the Iron Throne. Like,
I think
a good survivor.
I think you're absolutely right. I think he had a little bit of that reputation too, and I think it helped him get the job at Penn State and then ultimately get the job at Houston. That's not a knock on him. He's someone who has ambition, and he's gone out and he's gotten pretty far.
There's one guy... another guy I think is too high, and I understand why you put him at 11, but my spidey senses are tingling so heavily on Bruce Arians in Tampa, the whole era that it's going to be. I don't think he went into this with the
one
same –
one and done, potentially?
I don't think he went into the same commitment level that he's done in previous jobs. And
so he could be the reason he's not safe on some level.
I think he would be the reason. I love what he did. I think it shows excellent leadership in the NFL that he's the one saying, I want these minority coaches to get jobs. And I'm taking this job so I can bring these guys with me. I think it's so cool. But he was at a stage in his career where he said, I'm only coaching again if I'm not giving myself the responsibility of calling plays. Well, the whole Bruce Arians experience is him being the play caller. That's what it is. He's the quarterback guru. He's the play caller. And now he's giving that to other people.
Wow.
And I just worry that if he's all in.
That's a great call that there's a little it's a little reminiscent of Mike Shanahan in Washington.
Yes.
Which it almost felt like Mike Shanahan took the Washington job, not just for the money, which I'm sure was great. It has a Dan Snyder wing on his house like Deion Sanders. But that he wanted to set up his son and all of these young coaches. And that seems, when you hear Arians talk, to be a big-time motivation for him. He believes in not just Todd Bowles, but especially on the offensive side, Byron Leftwich and Harold Goodwin, all these assistants, that he's not only giving them jobs, he's helping their career, he's trying to like lift them up. But that's maybe not like what you want your head coach to be primarily motivated by.
I feel that a little bit too, Wes. But I guess for this exercise, I kind of more focused on guys that could have the job taken from them against their will. I could see him coming back and not having the fire and be like, this isn't for me, or he doesn't feel well physically, he's had health issues.
It could be him doing that. It could also be that the snowball factor is high here, too.
Yeah.
Not when
else?
Jameis Winston wins Comeback Player of the Year.
Real quickly,
XFL.
I don't have a huge problem with where you put Anthony Lynn at number 13, but the name that came to mind a little bit, the parallel, because there's so much talent on that team, that the way they moved on from Marty Schottenheimer after a season where they had a dominant record, where you have to ask, I like Anthony Lynn, but is he – you had a chance to go out and get one of those four or five coaches that are a true game changer. Would you ever move on from – I like Anthony Lynn, but I can't point to you why I think he's –
how many of those coaches are there?
I'm just saying it. Let's say.
I'd go the other way. I'd put him in the top 10 with Pete Carroll and Matt Nagy and Frank Reich. I mean, he got the Chargers 12 wins last year, and I think has the respect of that organization, and that he'd have a really long rope. I'd even put him higher.
I like him. I just something about if like Sean, you know, Payton became available or something like that. I don't know.
Two things working for him, I think, that makes him ultra safe this year. One, they took a big step last year, not only with that great season where they, you know, gave the Chiefs everything they could handle in that division, But then they go and they put together a brilliant defensive game and beat the Ravens, and that was a really impressive showing. And then we look at Phillip Rivers, a guy that looked like he could have been on the way out a couple of years ago. At least he was becoming a sloppier quarterback, and he's just been a much safer quarterback with the ball while still being kind of an elite guy.
I'm thinking if they go 9-7 and with the talent they don't, that's all. I'm not talking about today, but a year from now if it's disappointing.
He reminds me a little bit of John Harbaugh, and that's a compliment that I think his players believe he manages the team extremely well, like manages the personalities and the coaches and all that. And on some level, that's the biggest job a coach has.
I also, like at the combine, talked to him in the elevator for roughly 96 seconds and really liked him. So I'm rooting for him.
Let me throw out one name that I struggled with where to place him, because he's done a nice job there and I think he's well-liked. But he's coming off a really disappointing season. He's an older guy. Mike Zimmer with the Vikings. I have him at 26, which was my way of being like, I don't know. Either he's really safe or he's surprisingly not safe. Where do you guys come in on him?
You have him with Rivera, Quinn, and to me, they're all three very similar.
I think you had him in the right spot.
They have high expectations, and they're good coaches. So they would have to, really fall on their face, but I think that the patience might end up wearing thin if they have a disastrous season.
Okay, now the danger zone. Here we go. These are the guys, and again, it brings me no joy to report this, but if you had to, if there's going to be at least five guys that get let go, these are the guys that I would,
I mean, you could express your lack of joy by not playing this sound drop.
I think it needs to be done. All right, so here we go. DMX, he taught us. It's dark and hell is hot. Here we go. Matt Patricia, 29. He replaces Caldwell, who went 9-7 back-to-back years ago, 6-10. The whole organization seems to be a little bit of a funk. They play in a tough division. I got Doug Marrone at 30. Obviously, a hellish year last year in Jacksonville. Tom Coughlin was probably pretty PO'd about how last year went, so you got to get things going quickly. Number 31 on the list, I had Pat Shurmur of the New York Giants. And I don't know what it was. For some reason, when I started writing his blurb, this is the first thing that came to mind from The Sopranos.
Being something from the ground floor. I came too late for that. I know. But lately, I'm getting the feeling that I came in at the end. The best is over.
I just get the feeling that Shurmur is going to be an unfortunate – he'll be a footnote and will be viewed as kind of like a downtime for this organization that's in transition, that he's not part of the building of whatever comes next, that he's just going to be left behind.
Yeah, it just feels like he's been tugged around by a lot of team messaging and decision-making that I'm not sure – he may be the outlier who doesn't agree with what they're doing, but he has very little power compared to some of these other head coaches.
Yeah, that's well said, and I want to give a shout-out to Pat Leonard of New York Daily News. Finally, we've got a Giants beat writer willing to say, move on from the Eli era. And he's pointed out that basically Shurmur.
Or you've looked close enough to finally, bother to read an article.
No one else in New York is saying this. Name me someone who said, move on from Eli.
I mean, I could send you probably 100 articles.
Let's see them.
But, okay.
At minute 43 of literally every episode, we have this conversation.
I just want to thank Pat Leonard. Thank you for
good
doing
job, Patty. And
watch
finally,
you back, though.
Number 32, the man most likely, I believe, to get let go is Jay Gruden of the Redskins. Tough situation. And 5 years, no playoff wins, 3 straight years without a postseason berth. That Alex Smith injury threw an entire wrench into the whole operation. And now he's tied to Dwayne Haskins, who may very well turn into a good pro or a great pro at quarterback, but maybe not right now. And Jay Gruden needs a quarterback and a team that's going to win right now. And I'm just not seeing it.
I think you nailed this tier.
Yeah. I agree. Yep. Patricia is the only one that I would even quibble a tiny bit that he's only going into his second year, and he's got a GM that I think if Patricia is fired, they're going to fire the GM too. And I think ownership is maybe going to have patience enough where, let's say he wins 6 or 7 games again, I think he'd be fine. Maybe
really?
The fans. Yeah, I think he'd be. I mean,
here's
it's only
the thing, though, Greg.
Coaches don't get fired after 2 years too often when there's an alignment with the front office, when there's no ownership issues or anything like that. I think Martha Ford, if they win 6 or 7 games, is not going to just blow up the Quinn Patricia thing after only 2 years.
Here's the thing, though, Greg. While I agree with everything you just said, history, Chris Wessling, is instructive. and then you go through it.
You get that third year, though.
I'm saying you go through it, and the great people in NFL research help me with this. Seven or eight guys are getting canned every January now. So you got to find them from somewhere. Now, maybe it is this year will be the 2010 year. And maybe Matt Patricia, even if it is seven or eight guys, won't be among that group.
I think those guys like Quinn and Garrett and Rivera are in more trouble just because I think their playoffs are fired.
Well, see, I don't know. See, my thing.
But they have better teams, so they have a better chance to keep the job.
That's fine. My problem maybe Matt Patricia isn't in the danger zone, but who do you put him much higher up in this list? You name some guys. I don't agree with that. I would keep Matt Patricia where he is based on the fact that that team could also go 4-12, and they look optically a team that wants to run the ball first and do all this stuff that feels like it's from 1992. It's got to work, or you look like you're lagging behind.
He's got to make his team interesting.
That's the challenge. All right. There you go. Check it out, NFL.com/Hanzus.
A banger.
A banger. Thank you, boys.
The problem is you can't write another article.
Yeah.
Because the way that works, they just go to your writer profile page, and if this banger is replaced by two or three...
I'll let this one sit there for
I was going to say, just hang off the banger territory for a bit.
All right. Let's now get to it. Oh, yes. A little treat. A Friday treat. All right. You know, we promised a surprise. And the Around the NFL podcast has always had a very, rich history and connection with the hip-hop world. Last year, Ice Cube in studio, of course. Reggie Bush, our friend from the Twitter show, dated Kim Kardashian, who's married to Kanye West. Connie Fox went viral with that Cardi B freestyle.
Cardi B, yeah.
Wes and Mark went to school with Grandmaster Flash.
Not true.
And, of course, Greg likes rap. But it all started, the connection, all started with a woman from the Bay Area who's got the whole scene on lock, Lil Debbie. And with the Raiders and Antonio Brown back in the news, we had to bring her back. What is up, Lil Debbie?
Hey, thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
Oh, it has been too long. And you know what? Oh, listen to this. Turn this up. Turn this up in my headphones, Ricky.
Oh, yeah.
Listen to this.
New stuff.
Yeah.
This is the new stuff off Bay Chronicles, Lil Debbie's latest. Side Ho. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. What is Side Ho about, by the way? I think I might know.
I have one of those in my life.
Yeah, that's amazing, and I love that. I always support that movement. Do you. Be great. Live your best life.
Oh, I love it. All right, Deb. Here's the thing. So you're a Raiders fan, and if you're new to the show, you should know that Lil Debbie, in addition to being a rap star, is also a big fan of her hometown Raiders. And Antonio Brown, this melodrama around him with the frostbitten feet from the cryo chamber, the helmet drama. I imagine, Deb, none of this could sit well with you.
I mean, I'm a diva myself, and I understand, but I just here's my thoughts. Even though I am a diva, I thoroughly understand that if I want something, there's a way of saying it. And I just feel like if he had said that he wanted his helmet back in a nicer way, they probably would have just given it to him, right?
Well, according to the NFL, there's new rules where he had a grandfather period where he could have done it last year, but now it's by rule. Let me flip it a little bit, an analogy here. Let's say, Lil Deb, and you're always touring. Right now, I believe you're on a little bit of a break, but you're on the road a lot, right? Let's say your record label told you can no longer use your preferred, let's call it plant-based relaxant, okay?
Okay.
And instead, they told you what you could smoke. Wouldn't you fight that tooth and nail? Wouldn't you cause a stink? Wouldn't you walk out on your tour potentially to get what you thought you deserved?
No, I would never walk out on my tour, but...
That was a test. You passed. You have integrity, Lil Debbie.
And I understand fighting for what you want. But like I said, I just, as a woman, I also feel like if I want something, there's a certain way that I go about it. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of just... You got to be tricky. You got to be a little nice. You know what I'm saying? You might have to kiss some butt. I don't know, And I truly believe that. So I get it. Divas are divas. And I do believe there's a lot of divas in the NFL. But like I said, there's a way of going about it.
I don't know if there's a diva quite like Antonio Brown, but you got to deliver. If you're a diva, you got to deliver the talent. Like, what are some of the like management troubles that you've had over the years where you've had to experience, you know, show some diva behavior?
Oh, it's more like green room diva behavior. Like when I get to the venue, I'm like, everybody is up and out of my green room. I don't really know you. I don't play well with others. Things like that. You know, you got to have my veggie platter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my Vouv, water. I've walked into venues and they not had water for me, and I had to, you know, kind of get a little sassy.
No green M&Ms ever.
Yeah. Exactly. Things like that. That's when the diva really kind of comes out.
As a very plugged in Raiders fan, I guess my question is, you know, you're on the road a lot, but when you are home in Los Angeles or up in the Bay, do you go to watch games at a local sports bar with your contingent, or do you just sit? I would imagine you live in what would be like a small castle or something. Is that, do you watch games at home?
You live in California. You know what it would cost to live in a small castle.
I assume you have that kind of money.
There is a cute sports bar near me on Wilshire. That's very cute. But, you know, since I'm traveling a lot, like Wednesday, I watched Hard Knocks in San Antonio at the hotel.
Look at you.
How are you liking this Hard Knocks season?
I like it. I mean, Derek Carr, he's looking real good. You know, I'm really excited for Keelan Doss. I think, you know, with this whole Antonio stuff going on, that, you know, it's dope for him because he gets a chance to kind of like prove himself and shine a little. And he's a Bay Area native. So I think that the ladies are going to love him. And I think that it's just a dope,
good looking man
position for him to be in.
That was one of my takeaways from Doss, that, you know, Hard Knocks always picks their underdogs that they get behind and they'll track his journey. But John Gruden's head coach seemed equally hung up, not just on his ability on the field, but like how he does with women. And that seemed, it came up multiple times, and it gets a little weird after a while, doesn't it?
But who doesn't love the ladies? You know what I'm saying?
Like, fair point.
I mean, like his 55-year-old head coach like keeps coming back to it. It's like, yeah, you know, stay out of his business.
She said, you're in on Gruden though, right? You got to be a Gruden fan.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry, I'm like, me. I think that, you know, with all this Antonio stuff going on, it's funny to see for me because I'm like, ooh, diva, you know? And as a female fan, it's funny. But it is causing some problems and it's causing some drama.
Absolutely.
You know? And I think there's more important things going on, and I don't think it's making him look the best. And he's a good player, you know what I'm saying? And so I just feel like he needs to just chill a little, you know? Maybe figure out another way to go about this.
I mean, one thought for you, you know, you're up there, you're sort of one of the Raiders' signature fans. You have a voice. John Gruden, the coach, is under contract for another 10 years guaranteed. So there'd be some run on this. Why not put together a kind of a Gruden anthem song, corner that market, and just have that thing blasting at the stadium week after week?
That's true.
That's where the money would come from.
I would totally be down to do that if I could, you know, get into games for free. Yeah.
Quid pro quo.
All right. We can maybe, I don't know. I don't know if we can somehow.
No, we can't do anything.
I don't think we can help that, but maybe we can somehow set you up with someone to talk to. I mean, it was big. I mean, it's big for Wiz Khalifa, black and yellow. You know, that could be a big, big move.
Well, that's tied to the team.
Right there. That's not a very solid point. Mm-hmm.
Let's not ignore the, you know, 800-pound gorilla in the room, though. They're leaving your town. Are you going to remain
a
Raiders fan when they go to Vegas?
Well, I actually was currently in Las Vegas maybe a month ago, and I'm a Las Vegas fan. I like to do trashy things, so that's, you know, my side thing.
Erica, just like you.
So we drove into Vegas because I live in LA, and it's like 3 to 4 hours, 3 if you're speeding.
Yes.
And I got to drive by the stadium. And it's very impressive as of right now.
Mm. So it sounds like you're sticking.
You're in.
I'm in. You know, I live in Vegas. I mean, I live in L.A. It's close to Vegas. It's sad. And I actually went to a game. Was it the beginning of this year or maybe the end of last year in Oakland? So I got to see the Raiders there. It was a really great experience. Me and my homegirl's photo got to be up on the screen. You know, we did all like the hashtagging and all that kind of fun stuff. And I'm excited for them because I think it's going to be an improvement for them. And I think they're going to be happy with the setup there.
All right, Lil Debbie. I mean, you've done it. You came, you've conquered. And, you know, this woman, she releases music at the pace of Bob Dylan in the 60s. There's always new albums coming
prolific.
Out.
It's prolific.
But the latest is Bay Chronicles. It's out right now. It includes that single, Side Ho.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, beautiful. Follow Lil Debbie on Twitter, at L1L Debbie. And, you know, maybe next time you're on the show, come visit us in the studio again.
Yeah. I would love that. I would love to see all your faces.
Awesome.
Good. We like the gift you gave us last time. I know that I personally enjoyed it. So,
oh,
more
I'm
of those, please.
You enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Very good. All right, Lil Debbie, thank you.
Thank you for having me. You guys enjoy your day.
You too.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Thanks, Deb. Oh, Lil Debbie, she did it again.
Delightful.
She's the best.
I forgot to ask one question in my notes that for the listener, to be honest, like there's been this. It's been going on for a couple of years where some people, conspiracy theorists, believe that Little Debbie and Tiny Box, mm-hmm. Colleen Wolf, are the same person. And I was going to get her just to comment on the fact that that's absolutely not true. Didn't get to it. The theories still live.
Yeah, if you are among those people in that group, certainly you now saying it after the interview is over only fuels that fire.
I'm finally doing this thing.
Lil Debbie, that's why they're her third time on the show? Fourth?
I think it's her...
third, I believe.
Maybe one in-person visit. We got to get her in the studio next. Remember, there was a delay last time because she had matters going on in the car in the parking lot. She did, yes.
That was a famous appearance, yes.
Yeah, she had...
Notorious.
Yes, the car was parked, but there was action inside the car. I don't even know how to put it.
Leave that to the imagination. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. We'll be back next week. A reminder, the fantasy extravaganza with a big fish coming into the boat next Wednesday. No jury duty. We're flying.
Civic wonder.
I was going to serve my country. Just like if there, you know, if we ever got our generation, we got very lucky. Let's face it. No draft or anything for wars. I would have been the first guy at the draft complex there.
Well, we don't know that. I mean, you can say that, but that's
I mean,
yeah, you
they,
don't, you know, that
they
theory
do
will
have
never
a way.
Tested.
Yeah, you can enlist. That's
yeah, you have.
That's open and available. Because if you're saying you're first for the draft, that just means you enlist.
Yeah, but those are the real heroes. Those are the real brave guys. But I'm saying I'm the next tier. Like the
I don't think they have like, I want to be in the upper draft list. That just means you're entering the like,
the men and
military.
Women that serve this country and they enlist. I have so much respect for them. They are true heroes.
I mean,
they,
you're almost getting too old. You better do
power
it
rankings.
Soon.
You are not part of the conversation.
If you were making a power rankings on American heroism, I would never put myself in that group. But I'm right below that.
Nor would anyone else. You are not in the rankings. You had a choice. You could have made a career choice
to
be a military
person. You're saying
person.
you're ahead of the first responders. You're ahead of like firemen. I don't know about that.
I'm not ahead of them either.
So you just
but
said,
that's a different power ranking.
Wait, you're gonna have.
I'm ahead of you guys. Is all I'm saying.
No, that is also. So inaccurate.
The line.
That is
Harry
highly
and Jack
inaccurate.
Are going to walk you down to the recruiting office.
You guys are halfway to Canada.
This is absurd.
And I'm right there talking to Uncle Sam.
I mean,
a lot of talk.
Some
what
part
it,
of
all of this.
There
is
a part of being a hero that says,
"Ricky, you buy it, right?"
No,
oh,
she,
yeah, definitely.
She has to. She says she has to. You know, removing all aspects of self promotion would be one way to be a hero and a bit countercultural today. Instead, you're telling us how fantastic you are. Give me a break.
I'd be there first in line.
Was that a shot at Cameo?
No, it was not. I'm going to be a proud member of Cameo soon.
All right. Everybody, wherever you are, Canada, the United States, the UK, Australia, listeners all over the world, have a great weekend. Stan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Lil Debbie, and Rick Hollywood behind the glass. Till Monday.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.